Good afternoon. Delighted to be with you, and thank you for this opportunity. Today is my, at least planned, my last day filling in for our Tanakh B'Shana series. So it's been wonderful.
Does that mean she's coming back next
No, we have someone else who's going to be filling in. I think next week is the 5th. I think the 5th, we're not meeting next week. This year we'll not meet next week. And then the following week you'll have a guest, and I think Emma will be back the week after that. But you'll check your emails. I just work here. So thank you for the opportunity. Today we are thinking about Sefer Yeshayahu. And what I want to focus on today is a very important message from the concept and the personality and the message, or a message, an overarching message of the Navi Yeshayahu, specifically his placement in the books of Tanakh, that relates to us on a personal level. There's nothing wrong with being a country boy. When I grew up in Baltimore, and we used to go to baseball games, and at the Baltimore Orioles baseball game, they have a song during the seventh inning stretch. Now, so in Chicago, the seventh inning stretch, I don't know what they have at the White Sox, but at the Cubs, I think it's Take Me Out to the Ball Game. That's like a very famous thing, correct?
Correct.
Got it. But in Baltimore, I don't know what it's like now, but growing up, they used to play a song called Thank God I'm a Country Boy. I mean, we're south of the Mason-Dixon line. We're not exactly country boys in Baltimore, but okay. So there's something beautiful about being a country boy, and there's something great about that. But what we're going to talk about today takes us far beyond that. That's going to be the goal. So let's start with the Gemara. We mentioned this Gemara when we talked about Sefer Shmuel. This Gemara talks all about the organization of the books of Tanakh, of the Sifri Tanakh, the Sidron Shel Leviim, the Gemara says here. It's verse number one. The Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Yudalad on the base. Tana Rabbanan, Sidron Shel Leviim, the order of the Leviim, Yehoshua, the Shoftim, Shmuel Umalachim, which we spoke about, how according to Tanakh, Shmuel is one book, Malachim is in one book. Then, Yirmiah, Yechezkel, and Yeshaya, and then the Treyasar, the Shemus. According to Chazal, that is the intended sequence. That what we find after Malachim is Yirmiah, Yechezkel, and Yeshaya. And then come the Treyasar. The Gemara challenges that here on the third line. Mechti, Hosea, came earlier. So, how do we square the fact that these Nevi'im are out of order? Well, we say, well, since Chagai and Zechariah Malachi were at the end, so we're going to put Hosea together with them. They have small books. They might get lost. But now the Gemara presents the issue that we need to think about today, which is go down fourth to the last line of this section of the Gemara on your page. Yeshaya Kadim mi Yirmiah. Yeshaya lived before Yirmiah. So, why is Yeshaya at the end in the order? Because the order here is Yirmiah, Yechezkel, and Yeshaya. I don't understand. The Yechezkel lekadmei leYeshaya. Why don't you put Yechezkel in front of Yeshaya? Bereisha. Kevan de Malachim Sofei Churbana, the Yirmiah Kule Churbana, that's why we put them together. What is Sefer Malachim? Sefer Malachim is the book that, I guess, it catalogs the monarchy, but really the beginning, which was the good times, and then ultimately the downfall of the monarchy. It ends with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It's a story that concludes with Churban. So since it concludes with Churban, and Yirmiyahu is Kule Churbana, now it's not totally Churban, there are some patches in Yirmiyahu that are more positive, but overwhelmingly, Yirmiyahu is about destruction, Churban. V'Yechezkel, and Yechezkel is Reishi Chorbona. It's the beginning of the book of Yechezkel is about the Chorbona. Where is Yechezkel prophesying? In exile, in Babylonia. He's way at the end. V'Seife, and the conclusion of Yechezkel is Nechemta, is consolation. V'Yeshaya, Kuli Nechemta, it's all consolation. So what do we do? Says the Gemara, Samchinon churbana lechurbana v'nechemta lenechemta. So we have a sequence. It's like dominoes. You put the comparable ones next to each other, right? Remember this game?
Yeah.
It's good.
Subject matter rather than years.
So Sefer Melachim concludes with a churban. So what's going to be contiguous with that? Churban. Who is churban? Mr. Churban is Yirmiyah. That's all Churban. So Yirmiyah is going to go after Malachim. Who picks up Churban but then starts the transition? Yechezkel. So Yechezkel thematically goes next, followed by Yeshaya, who is Kulei Nechama. All consolation. If you open a Tanakh, is that what you'll find? It's not what you'll find. If you open a Tanakh, Yirmiyah is not first. First it's Yeshaya, then it's Yirmiyah, then it's Yechezkel. Right? Open any Tanakh.
You have to take this article one. Just for demonstration purposes.
Shmuel,
I can pass it around if you don't trust me.
We trust you. Malachi, we trust you.
Yeshaya, Yirmiyah.
Shmuel, hold on.
Yechezkel. So what happened? Why do we not conform to what Chazal identified as the Seder, the Sindron Shel Neviim? There has to be a reason why it is that our tradition follows a different path. There's got to be some meaning to our order. So what is that?
Give us koach to go through.
Okay, nice. To give us strength to be able to navigate the Churban, we're going to start with something sweet, good. So you know who raised this question? A great biblical commentator from the 15th century. His name was Don Isaac Abarbanel. The Abarbanel wrote a lengthy commentary on Torah and the Neviim and Ksuvim. Abarbanel was a master commentator. His commentary itself has a very interesting history to it because it was written piecemeal when he was running away from Spain after the expulsion of Jews. The Abarbanel has a hakdama, an introduction to Sefer Yeshaya, where he raises this question. And he offers five suggestions. Five insights as to why it is that our tradition, it can't just be an accident. It's got to be somehow religiously or divinely inspired. Lav Neviim Heim B'nei Neviim. Why is it that we put Yeshaya in the first spot? So he gives you five insights, which are enumerated on your page here. I just give you the headline, the caption of each one, and each one he goes and explains at length. His commentary is very, very long. So if you want to see it inside, you can find it on Svaria, which is where I clipped this from. You can read the whole thing on your own. It's beautiful, but just make sure you have a cup of coffee. You know what I mean? Like, be ready for it. It's very long. That's the Barbanel. All right, we love him. He's incredible. Habachina harishona, hi mipa'as hazman. The first reason we put Yeshaya at the beginning is because of the time. Lefisha Hakodem Baharishon Bizman, because the first one who comes first chronologically, Roy Shiyaktim Zichrono Lemuchar Mimenu Bizman. So the Gemara, although the Gemara rejected this answer, the Gemara already told us, we know that Yeshayahu, he prophesied at the time of Uzziyahu, the king, which is before Yirmiyahu, who prophesied at the time of Yoshiyahu, who was before Yechezkel, who prophesied after the Jews were exiled. So the simple reason why our Tanakh is shaped the way that it is that it follows chronology. We go back to the chronology of Yeshayahu first, Yirmiyahu next, and Yechezkel last. That's the first answer. V'abachina ha'sheinis, the second reason, he mipa'as ha'poel. What's that mean, mipa'as? Because of the poel, the actor. Rotzolomar, mailas Yeshayahu ben Amos. Because of the mila of Yeshaya. Yeshaya was on such a high level, he was such a distinct individual, we have to put him first. Mailas Yeshayahu ba'atzmo, and Yichus Mishpachto al kol Shar Nevi'im. We have a tradition, the Gemara says in Megillah, that Amos and Amatzia were brothers. Who was Amos? Well, the first pasuk in Yeshaya tells us who Yeshaya was. Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amos. His father was Amos. That means his uncle was Amatzia. Who was Amatzia? That's right, the king. So that means Yeshaya's family, his father, was from the Davidic dynasty. He wasn't just a prophet. He was also a shtikel malchus. Right? I don't want to get involved in various controversies about, you know, monarchies, who's in the monarchy, who's going to Canada, who's doing this, that, they like, they don't like. It's politics, you know what I'm saying? So his father was not the king. His father was the king's brother. You know how these things are. Paparazzi, v'chule. Yeah.
There's something also melding those two things together, like in terms of time having more, a stronger connection to Hashem, like, you know, get sort of in time less?
I'm not sure. Here he's speaking strictly from a stature standpoint. Yeah. Which is a double-edged sword. We find oftentimes that Yichus is something that we look toward. And we say, oh, you know, I'm a grandson of the, you know, such and such Rebbe. On the other hand, we often say that that can also be a critique. You know, you're the grandson of such and such. Well, you don't look like such and such, you know? So it's not so simple, right? Yichus is, but it is an element. It is an element. Ein adome, right? Filas tzadik ben tzadik, tzadik ben Russia. Okay? That's a whole different element. Third answer. Va'abachina ha'shlishis. Says Abarbanel, he mepa'as hatsura, because of the shape, the tsura of the nevuah, of nevuas Yeshayahu, the tsuros nevuas Shar HaNevi'im. What does that mean? So Abarbanel goes on to explain that there are different forms of visions that a person can receive from the Almighty. What is a nevuah? Niv, the source of the word nevuah, means speech. The Navi, their job is to be the spokesperson for Hashem. But how do they receive their message? So there are lots, the Medrash says, there are lots of different formulations of that message. It could be through what we call a chizayon. Chazon means to have a vision. It could be a chalom, a dream, different. So he says, well, the tzuras of the nevuas of Yeshayahu, those are distinct. And then he has a long discussion, the Abarbanel, comparing how the structure and the form of the nevuas of Yeshayahu are on a higher level, on a distinct level, compared to other Nevi'im, based on his analysis. That's number three. Number four, v'ha'bechina ha'revius, mipa'as chomer ha'sefer hazeh, because of the seriousness of this sefer, what does it mean? One aspect, somebody, you alluded to this earlier, and this is along the lines of what the Abarbanel is saying, that you know what the mile of somebody is? It's to see the positive. It's not a great chachma to cut other people down, to criticize, to condemn. It's an amazing idea. It's Abarbanel. It's not some, you know, folktale. Abarbanel says, to cut someone down is not a big deal. But to raise someone up, to give them nechama, to give them chizuk, that's a high level. Kefi rov hanechama svatovos sheni b'li Yisrael omiyuta. The more positive you are, says at a certain level, the higher level you are. And because the Gemara says, that this sefer is kulo nechamasa. It's totally infused with nechama. Now, again, that's the general categorization. It doesn't mean that you won't find Musar and Sefer Yeshayah. You certainly will. But it's kulo nechamasa. It's categorized by compassion, consolation, chizuk. That makes it on a high level. Isn't that a beautiful insight? The more positive you are, the more you give people chizuk and love. I was just listening on the radio. They had new research that came out, classroom research. They took two different kinds of... You heard about this? No? Zog?
Well, they half of them complimented it, the children, and half of them told them they were not great.
Right, they gave them traditional musar, and
the children who were complimented achieved more.
They did 30% better in school because the reinforcement that they got was positive. You know Machanchim? You know somebody who's in education.
Yeah.
You know people. So that's an amazing concept. Being positive is a higher level. To see the positive. Yeah.
But he was just giving over what Hashem told him.
That's right. That's right. And by the way, that's probably why at the beginning of Yirmiyahu is not so excited to be the prophet of doom. I mean, besides the fact that he's going to spend his life being harassed and persecuted and jailed. But maybe also what he's saying is, I want to be the prophet of positivity, because that's a higher level. Being a prophet of gloom, anybody can be a prophet of gloom. I want to be a prophet at the higher level of being machazik. That's number four. And number five, he says, is va'abachina ha-chamishis, the fifth aspect, mipa'as ha-tachlis, is because of the ideal. V'zeh she-tachlis ha-sefer v'zeh hu la-havio la-hagia ha-adam al-tachliso ho-amiti hu la-hodio kalosa olam v'sofo. The purpose of this book is to bring the person, to bring each of us, to inspire us, to do our best, to be the best that we can, and meet our goal in life. That's the purpose of the word of Hashem, is to guide us to be the best that we can be, to be our ultimate goal. So he then goes on to explain, how does a person define themselves? What is a person's ultimate goal? He quotes a machlokas among the Rishonim. Is this about the perfection of the soul in the next world? Or is it the perfection of the soul and the body in the next world? But these are themes that come up in Sefer Yeshayah. So since Sefer Yeshayah is about the telos of existence, the purpose of my soul, what I'm focused on, so you begin with the end in mind. So says the Abar Benel, these are five reasons, five explanations as to why it is that the Yeshayah is in first place. Number one, chronologically. Number two, from a stature standpoint. Number three, the level and distinctiveness of his prophecies. Number four, because of the importance, the weight, the gravity that we give to positivity and the importance, the priority we give that. And number five, because it addresses the telos of humanity and of existence. Those are the five reasons why Yeshayah comes first. Good? Mm-hmm. Can we add one more?
Sure.
Okay. So here's the Gemara in Chagigah. Amar Rava. Kol shera'a Yechezkel, ra'a Yeshayah. Everything that Yechezkel saw, Yeshayah saw. Yechezkel had a vision. This is in the first chapter of Sefer Yechezkel. It's what we call the Maisa HaMerkava, the vision of the chariot. That vision describes angels and all of that. That's the vision of Yechezkel. And the Gemara says that everything that Yechezkel saw, all of the chariots and the fire and the chayos and things that are called chashmal, all of these beings, these spiritual beings, Yeshayah saw it also. And Yeshayah had a vision. But that vision, which appears in Perek Vav here in Yeshayah, is much briefer. It's much more truncated. It's very slim. It's only a handful of psukim. This is the kadosh, kadosh, kadosh that we are familiar with. That kadosh, kadosh comes from the vision of Yeshayah. if you look in, that's in the beginning of Perek Vav. But if you look in Perek Aleph in Yechezkel, you have a very lengthy and detailed description. So the Gemara wants to understand, why is it that Yechezkel is so detailed and Yeshaya is so brief? I don't understand. It's over a whole page. In this edition, the Nevuah of Yechezkel is over a whole page. And the Nevuah of Yeshaya is like six lines. So why is that? Says the Gemara, Kol Shira Yechezkel, that lengthy description of all the holy celestial beings, Yeshaya saw them. Lama Yechezkel Doma, what is Yechezkel like? Legben Kfar Shira Es HaMelech, like a villager who saw the king. V'lama Yeshaya Doma, Lama Yeshaya Doma, and what is Yeshaya like? Leben Krach, like a city dweller who saw the king. Yechezkel is like the country boy, and Yeshaya is like the big city dweller. What does this mean? So look at Rashi here at the bottom. Ra Yeshaya, kishisharsa olav Ruach HaKodesh, when the Ruach HaKodesh rested on Yeshaya, kama shenemar va'eres Hashem Yoshev Akisi Ram Nisa, ela shelo chash lefarish esakol. Yeshaya didn't bother to lefarish, to explain every element that he saw. Shahaya ben Malachim, he was the son of kings. Now, of course, it means he was the son of kings literally. He was related to Amatzia. V'godal b'paltin u'ben krach haroes hamelech. And the says the Rashi, the ben krach, the person who lives in the environs of the palace, eino nidfal. He's not so blown away. Ve'enu tamea, he doesn't find it so wondrous. Ve'enu chash l'saper, he doesn't talk so much. Yechezkel sees, and because he's a country boy, when he comes to the palace, he comes home and he tells people, you have no idea what I saw. I saw wrought iron gates that were 10 feet tall. And then I saw paved roads. Paved roads. And then I saw huge oak doors. And goes on and on. Because where he's from in the countryside, they don't even have paved roads. They don't have wrought iron gates. They have picket fences. They don't have oak doors. They have shutters. But Yeshaya is the Ben Krach. He's the big city dweller. So if you live in a big city, you're not nisfal from paved roads or from ring doorbells. Everybody has a doorbell. Everybody has a lamp outside their house. You're not as spoiled. You're not impressed by that. Maybe this is a reason why we put Yeshayahu first. Because Yeshayahu is the Ben Krach. The Ben Krach, it's not just that he doesn't need to talk about all the details because they're not impressive to him. The Ben Krach, because he's accustomed to living in the environment of the king, he has what we could call godless hamochen. He has a bigger vision. He has greater hasagos. He has greater aspirations. As opposed to somebody who is a ben kfar, a villager, you ask them what they like for their birthday, they say, you know, can I have a bag of corn? Because their hasagos, their ambitions are so limited. Because they're a country boy. If you grow up near the king, you have much greater ambitions. What do you see? What do you aspire to? Nechama's grandmother, she lived me well. She was married for 30 years to Rabbi Rafal Palkovitz. So I remember he told this story at least twice. That I probably have heard it many times. But I heard it from him twice. Tremendous ha'ara. He used to tell Mishalom like this. Zichrono levracha. Says there was a country a country bumpkin who at the turn of the 20th century was visiting a parade. And the parade was some high-ranking official from the Tsar's army. And he was coming through, and as you know, it was a very tumultuous time. And there was an anarchist who ran from the back from the stands, you know, from among the multitude of people at the parade. He ran to the front of the line of the parade. He reached over, he pulled out of his coat a bomb, and he threw it at the chariot. Because on this parade, you had flutes and you had soldiers, and then in the center of it, you had a chariot with six beautiful white horses, all wearing those like crown helmet types of things, and the coachman, and in the back was this senior officer, this general in the Tsar's army, and the anarchist, just when this high-ranking official is passing by in his beautiful coach, the anarchist throws a bomb and it explodes and there's mayhem. So what happens? Two people go home from this event. The first one is the country bumpkin. And he goes back to his family. He goes back to his neighbors on the farm, to the village, to the kfar, and he says to them, "You won't believe what I saw." And the other is a big city dweller. He lives in a big city. He works in a newspaper firm. He covers the government. He's a political observer. He goes, runs right back to his office in his suit and tie. He gets back to his little typewriter there, his fax machine, his email, whatever he has in 1900, his quill, and he starts writing the story of what happened. It was crazy. Crazy. So he writes a story for the newspaper. Huge headline. What's the huge headline? The huge headline is Tsarist official murdered in bombing. And then the byline and the story of how this was an important parade and there was a general and he was in his coach. And you won't believe what happened. An anarchist threw a bomb and killed a man. Assassinated him. The country bumpkin comes home, and what does he tell his friends? He says, "You won't believe what I saw today. I saw a crazy thing. I saw at the parade, I saw a Meshuggah guy with an overcoat take something out of his coat. I think that's what they call a bomb. And he killed six beautiful, muscular horses. I never saw a thing like that in my life." So the people saw the same event. But the person who's the Ben Krach, who lives in a big city, he knows what that event really means. An Amochen de Gadlus, in a big vision type of thing. The Ben Kfar, all he knows is horses. So to him, that was the most unbelievable event. Where does Yechezkel prophesy? What does it say? In Bavel. It says, Al Nahar Kvar. First of all, the meaning of the word Kvar, I heard a beautiful part from Moshe Weinberger once. The Kvar means it already was. Everything already was. I can't change. I can't grow. I can't improve. Kvar. Kvar. But more than that, Nahar Kvar, the concept of being misnabe in the golos, means that the only thing you're able to see is as a ben kfar. Your vision is limited. Because when you live in golos, when you live in exile, so you have katnas hamochin, you can't really see the greatness. You see baruch kavod Hashem mimakomo, you see the hiddenness of God. So you see, when bad things happen, lo aleinu, we see the death of the horses. Because we're in Golos, that's all we could see. Just horses being killed. But the people who are like Yeshaya, they are living in Geula, in the presence of Hashem. When they see a tragedy, they don't see dead horses. They see the Shechina Kivyachol, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, being dragged down in a tragedy in a Chilul Hashem. Both happen. But there is the small way of looking at it, the mochin de katnas, and then there is the big way of looking at it, the mochin de gadlas, that I'm not sure I even have the kalim, the tools, to understand it myself, let alone explain it to you. But I know that it's true. We all know that it's true. That there is a difference between a visionary, somebody who sees the big picture, the values, the major issues, and somebody who only sees what they would call in Yiddish, the kleinigkeit, the small things, the narrow, the arguments, the pettiness. And what we're saying is perhaps not, again, chas v'shalom, we're not criticizing Yechezkel, and we're not diminishing him, but what we're saying is the nature of someone who prophesies in Gaulus, in exile, is just limited because you're a country boy. The nature of someone who prophesies in Eretz Yisrael, who prophesies positivity, who prophesies begadlus hamochin, that person is a ben krach. You're living in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is paltarin shel melech. It's the palace of the king. Living in Israel is living in the palace. So you see what the king is all about. You don't just see horses, you see the king himself, kiviyachol. So this is our calling. Even if we live in exile, which is unfortunately the situation that we find ourselves in, Baba Nesina Rabin, but at least we can appreciate, number one, to understand that we're living in exile. You know the old story of Rav Nachman Mibreslov. Rav Nachman tells a story of a king and his close confidant, his closest advisor. And the advisor comes to the king and he says, Your Majesty, we have a crisis. All of last year's grain is finished. And all of the new grain that grew this year has a particular disease. If you eat from this grain, you become insane. You go mad. So what do? Everyone in the kingdom is going to eat the bakery bread and become mad. And we're going to become mad too. So the king says, I hear you, it's a problem. But as they say in Yiddish, Vos kemen ton, what are you going to do? But here's what we need to do, the king said to the advisor. The two of us, we're going to put a mark on our head, right here, with ink. And when we look at each other and we see that mark, at least we'll remember that we've gone mad. At least we'll remember that we're insane. So that's the first thing, is to be aware when we are in the state of Ben Kfar, when we're in that katnas hamochin, when we're in that smallness, to have that self-awareness, to recognize that, to understand that. But of course, the greater calling is to find ways to connect to Hashem that transcend our limitations of a Ben Kfar to become a Ben Krach. To dream big dreams of Ruchnius. To find ways that we can see what Yeshayahu saw. And that's why he didn't have to talk about it so much, because it wasn't such a big deal for him. How do we do this practically? Each one of us has to think about it for ourselves. How do we find a deeper connection to Hashem within ourselves? How do we transcend the smallness and the pettiness of life to be that person of godless hamochen, to be that Yeshayahu? But ultimately, the story is written for us. The Gemara says that all of the prophecies that are written down, they are nevuos, they are prophecies that are written, they are nichtavu ledoros, for future generations. So this is our generation too. Our generation has an element of Yechezkel, but also an element of Yeshaya. On one level, we are, each one of us is a Ben Kfar, but we also have the capacity to be a Ben Krach. It's a struggle. Sometimes we succeed, sometimes we fail. But perhaps this is why Yeshaya comes first, because it sets the ultimate vision for each one of us. It sets the priority in terms of what we want to aspire to ultimately. Begin with the end in mind. The end in mind is Yeshaya. It's the Ben Krach. It's the person who has that godless hamochen, really that deep visionary connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who sees everything, the greatness of Hashem. And of course, that includes within it the positivity despite all of our struggles. That is the goal of Yeshaya. That is the message that we can take for our own lives, to seek our own way of becoming, at least in a small measure, a Ben Krach, a city boy.